This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Got a little motto, always sees me through. When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
I turn to you like a flower leading toward the sun. I turn to you, 'cause you're the only one.
And when I fall down, I have to pick myself back.
Is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome everyone. I am Michelle Barber and you are listening to Stand Up Straight, where we aim to provide a vehicle for the allied supporters to stand up for our GLBT&I communities, to encourage and create greater inclusion, share stories, give advice, create dialogue or introduce a new way of thinking. But most importantly, to facilitate change towards greater acceptance of our rainbow family in all its shapes and sizes. So tonight, I'm going to be asking you guys out there, the listeners, to let your fingers do the talking. So I'm going to be asking you some questions, and you'll know why in a moment, because I've got a fabulous man that is going to take the microphone in a second. So we've got our anti-homophobia campaigner, our one cupper at a time guy, and an all-round good person to the core. And I've probably made him blush, but he deserves it. And it's Daniel Whithouse returning. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you very much. And blushing on cue.
Well done, you. And all of those things are true. And I always think of you as the one cupper at a time guy, because I've used that line when I've had people in the studio or even out and about. And I say to them, you know, Daniel Whithouse uses this all the time. He says when I ask how does he tackle homophobia, one cuppa at a time. And it's true, isn't it, for you?
Look, it's one of those things that over the years I've found that people find that homophobia seems to be big and scary and overwhelming, and what is it that I can do, and that we can either be paralyzed by that, or we can say, look, you know, we can put one foot in front of the other. And rather than saying you have to change the world, it's like those things. There's many other sayings, like, you know, one person at a time, one conversation at a time. And my thing is, it's just I love a cuppa. I'm a bit of a, you know, a cuppa cuppa fan, and it's about, you know, what can everybody do? Everybody can have one conversation over a hot beverage.
Correct. Yeah, that's true. We just had one just now before we came on air.
A bit of a sip.
Had a cup of tea.
But of course, there are no hot beverages allowed in the studios of Joy.
No, they're
not. So we've made sure that they're outside.
They are. Well done, you, and knowing your radio etiquette. So the reason I haven't sent our text and email is because I want to tell you guys, if you have a question of Daniel, if you want to share what you've done yourself to tackle homophobia, what's worked for you, what hasn't worked for you, is there something that do you want to tackle it but you don't know how? It's in your workplace, it's at school, it's your friends, it could be, you know, you could be 65 and listening out there and you've heard it all your life but you want to change it. We'd love to get, how many do you want tonight? 20, 30 questions, don't we, I reckon?
That would be lovely, and we'll get to a couple.
Yeah.
And I can also make a commitment that if people send through SMSs or emails, I can always put that up on my blog later on and answer the ones that we don't get to. So I'd be more than happy to do that.
Thank you. That'd be fabulous. And you can even ring lovely Brian at the on the front desk as well. And If you're even on Twitter, you could send us a question too. It's technology mad. That's what I am. And I will mention what the Twitter handle is in a minute. It is at Stand STR, the number 8, on Joy. And we will hopefully get some amazing questions. And we've got the guru, I think, in the studio. Do you think you are?
No, I think that I've probably been doing this for 2 decades and spoken to lots of people around the country and even overseas and heard about what they do. So most of what I do is just share what works for a whole bunch of people. So when I find that there's something, you know, you'd call it kind of trending on Twitter, if there's something trending in rural Australia, which a lot of people are doing, I love to share those things because it means it's working for a lot of people.
What's an example of something that's trending?
Look, if you speak to people who are talking about, you know, That's So Gay, for example,
yeah,
and what are a lot of teachers saying in response to students without any training or any prompting, they'll turn around and say, well, we don't stand for racism or sexism, so why are we going to let you get away with homophobia? It's just some simple strategies like that, and it's just most people say they just want to know what to say, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be kind of a line of interrogation, a line of questioning, and to, you know, it's about whether you want to shut something down or whether you want to engage and start a dialogue. And my option is always, where possible, to start that dialogue. But of course, if someone's screaming it out a car window on, on the street, or it's something that's a little bit more aggressive, of course, that's different. But every opportunity that you can to engage and start a dialogue is the best possible way to move people.
I agree. And I know when people ask me as far as being an ally, and when I have spoken a few times in the last 12 months or so, and I will often say, and I liken it to, I've often got the thoughts in my head of what you say, and I will think in my head, well, you know what? I don't have to stand on a soapbox. I don't have to berate anyone, really. I don't have to be rah, 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 and card carrying and whatever. If it's just something simple like, you know, that's not cool. Do you realise that that could hurt someone's feelings? And often that's just a trigger that they might not realise they've offended either. Do you find that as well?
Yeah, sure. It's one of those things. Like I launched on Ida Hobbit Day earlier in the year, so the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Intersexism and Transphobia. I launched the Oi campaign, which is all around. If you're in country Australia, you see something that's not okay, the first thing you say is Oi. Oi, that's not okay here. Oi, that, you know, can you move along, or oi, you know, just, you know, shut up, that's stupid, whatever you're going to say, you follow that up with. But there is that thing about getting someone's attention and letting them know that it's not okay,
stopping them in their tracks almost at that mid-sentence.
And look, I mean, you did talk about it's not about standing up on the soapbox and, you know, all this other kind of stuff, but, you know, we do need to make mention that there's a whole lot of people who have been, you know, in protest march, and they have kind of gotten up and given a rant at opportune times, and that works too. I just think it's that the majority of people tell me that they're most comfortable with that engaging through dialogue and the conversations. But, you know, by all means, if you think you can kind of, you know, you can bring it with a megaphone or, you know, some other way, whatever fits with your natural style. Because at the end of the day, you know, being natural and genuine is really important.
And correct. And then I have found, just through my experience, and probably you have as well, then that people are more keen to want to talk to you more. They want to engage with you more because your gentleness is what people see as well.
Yeah, look for me, this took me quite a number of years to get used to, but people just said, look, you're just so approachable. you just answer any question. I feel like I can talk to you about this stuff and you're not going to bite my head off or tell me off.
Yeah.
And look, I must admit, for mainstream Australian, particularly, you know, when we go out to those places that I like to hang out in rural and regional areas, that stuff is important. People want to know that they can ask something and not be told that it's wrong or they're stupid.
Yes, and that is because we might think they are stupid and it's wrong, but to tell them that, you're going to alienate them straight away, really. aren't you?
Yeah, look, my thing is always, you know, it's that old thing that, you know, great teachers say is there's never a stupid question. Is that, you know, my thing is that I've heard the basic questions over and over again, but what I have to recognise is that for that person it's new.
Yes.
And it's exciting, and it's kind of like it's you know, with trepidation that they kind of step forth and ask that, and I always try to step into their shoes and appreciate that that's the moment, and rather than going, I've answered this to 2,000 times in the last 2 years, why do I have to answer this again? It's about taking a breath and going, imagine if this is an opportunity to get someone to shift it even a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's how we're going to nip this thing in the bud, is over time with lots of us having those everyday conversations.
And you know what? And you've really hit the nail on the head. When you say you may have been asked this 2,000-3,000 times already, that in itself is proof that it hasn't gone away and that there still is work to do. If no one was asking you, or you weren't hearing homophobic slurs and much worse, then we would be out of jobs in a sense.
Sure. It's every opportunity I can do to provide people with spaces and platforms to have these conversations, I'll do. You know, that's why I jumped in a truck and drove around the country for 266 consecutive days. It was all like an extravagant gimmick. There's lots of smoke and mirrors, but that was all about, giving people every opportunity to have conversations that they wouldn't have otherwise had, or they haven't had for a very long time. And it's just creating those new opportunities and see where they're going. Gee, it can be a wild, exciting ride.
Oh, and I know all about that ride, because I have to say, and I said this many a times, that I go to bed with Daniel Whitehouse because I'm actually reading your book, and it is fascinating because, and I made you blush again, but
it's easy. Yeah.
People often sort of wonder what I mean by that, but and I sit and I read your book, and there's just the thing that strikes me, it's this everydayness about you, this the common touch, you know, it's this sort of thing, and that is what I think your magic is, and I think that's why you're having success. That's why it appears that doors open to you and people are curious by what you're doing, which kind of leads me into what we're going to talk to after this song and what you're doing. You're going to another part of Australia, which we'll talk about in a second, but I think that's what I found while reading your book. There's I think maybe if you bang so hard on the door to try and get in, no one's going to let you in. You know, do you find that?
Look. Sometimes that's going to work, but most of the time, I mean, whether we like it or not, Australians like it a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah,
they like it. They like it kind of to be a little bit more every day. And if anyone comes on strong about anything, it doesn't matter whether it's gay stuff. It could be about any issue at all. If you come on too strong for lots of people, they just kind of go, it's a little bit too much. Unless it's on a footy field or on some other kind of forum.
Yeah, we're going to go for a break and have a song. When we come back from the song, please while the song's on, send us through a message or a question, or tell us what's worked for you so far in tackling homophobia. Got lovely Daniel Whitehouse with us, and we're going to go for a song, come back and have a chat to Daniel, and he's going to tell us where he's heading off to in Australia next. And you are on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Be an ally. Talk it out. Educate yourself. Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Hi, everyone. You are with Michelle and Daniel Whitehouse, and we're talking about how we tackle homophobia, how he does. And you guys out there, please send us a message in and let us know what works for you, what doesn't work for you, what helpful hints, what words of wisdom Daniel can provide. And the lovely Scotty has done exactly that. He's one of your, do we say homies?
Oh, but because he comes from my hometown of Geelong. Sure,
yeah,
we can say that.
A homie. So he's got a great question. He says, Daniel, you really do great work. And I concur. That is absolutely correct. And he's asked, what personally drives you and your objective? It's a good question, Scotty. Thank you.
Thanks, Scotty. Look, the thing that drives me, and the thing that drove me when I first started this work, was I was quite a shy person in Geelong doing the work that I was doing to support young people. And I guess what I was trying to do was to make a difference locally to, like, for those young people. That's all I did. Like, it's really interesting. People said, what are you trying to do? And I'm just like, I just want to go and talk to the local schools in Geelong and where the young people I support go to. And I want to make sure that they're safer and more supported. And we can see if we can stop, you know, having things thrown at them and, you know, all this other kind of stuff that was happening. After a while, I was asked to do that in more schools, and I just kind of went, oh, okay, sure, if that can be helpful and you're silly enough to want me doing that, sure. And then it turned into a package, and that was formally evaluated. Then people said, what about statewide? What about national? How about you go on a Dutch government-funded kind of, you know, trip around the world to developing countries? And I just kept saying yes. And the thing, I guess, is that I want to make this thing that's really, really complex and hard and heavy simple, practical, yeah, and a little bit lighter. Now, I don't think that I can change the world. I'll try. But what I know I can do is I can make it a whole lot easier for a whole lot of people by doing some really basic stuff. And if I can share the stuff that both I've done, but also I've heard and seen other people do, then I just think that the only good's going to come from that.
Yeah. Throughout your travels and reading and speaking everywhere, is there one thing that somebody has said that you thought, you know what, I've never thought of that, or never thought of it from that direction or perspective? Is there anything?
All the time, off the top of my head, I can't think of it. But look, because I've been obsessed with this for the last 20 years, so from the first moment I picked up something around challenging homophobia, which is...
Hang on, why do you say obsessed?
Okay, so growing up in... Yeah, good question. Growing up in Geelong... You know, I just had this feeling that I was kind of helpless, and homophobia happened and I really couldn't do anything about it. I was lucky enough to pick up an article by Kenton Miller, who was then this kind of guru and idol of mine and a name on a page. And later on, I met him and he became a mentor, and now he's become one of my best friends and one of my collaborators. So I'm humbled by that. But I still remember when he just made all of these things seem easier. And it's kind of like, oh, I can think about this differently. And, yeah. And from that moment on, I just went, I want to find out more and what else is there. And then what I then started to do, because there's only so much you can do in challenging homophobia land, is I started looking at the racism stuff and the sexism stuff and all this other stuff to try and find, you know, what can I learn from those areas to come back to challenging homophobia and do it better. And, you know, at the moment, I'm doing a lot of work in male family violence prevention, and the crossovers there are incredible. And so I'm obsessed with coming up with as many different new ways of thinking about, because I know that people need different things.
Have you found that there are common denominators for all types of racism, homophobia, sexism? And do you find that there's a common thread or something along those lines that is with all those?
Look, there are distinct differences between them, but what's common for me is that they arise when someone is not completely comfortable in their own skin. They want to lash out at other people who make them feel uncomfortable. So if they don't agree with you, it's just as much a commentary on themselves as it is on the person that they're lashing out, you know, more so. And so for me, that's what I always come back to. But if you look at racism and sexism, all the rest of it, they do have their differences, but they come from a not so lovely place.
I would get the sense that it grows from the same place.
I guess from that point of view, and people often ask me, well, what do you do when you come up against someone who's, you know, scary or overt, or it kind of seems all complex and heavy, is that I'll try and find out as much as I can about that person, their context, where they're coming from. So there was some great stuff that I learned, which I'd never thought about before. I got it from a book that I found at Hares and Hyenas, so thanks to them, the fantastic LGBTI bookshop. I was just thinking, then, are we on the ABC? I'm not allowed to promote people.
No, they are. They're a fabulous, great, and very, very huge supporter of the GLBTI community.
Absolutely, in so many ways. So I walked in there one day and I found this book and it was on the specials table. And it was, and thank goodness. And it was, I think it was called Setting Them Straight, something like that. Mm. And it was all about that not only are people homophobic, but there are different types of homophobic people. So rather than thinking about you're either homophobic or you're not, you know, this book outlined five different types. I've since added one more to that for the work that I do and in my first book. But it's that idea that rather than coming at it from the same place all the time, there's different ways, there's different levels, different types, different attitudes, different behaviours. And the more that you kind of get into it, the more fascinating it comes, that you can kind of find out people's context and know the, you know, one of the better ways to actually address it rather than kind of waste your energy. It's kind of like, here is kind of what's most important for them. Mm. And here is something that's worked in a lot of other similar situations.
So one of the situations that one of the places you're going to next, and I think it's next week, is it not?
It's next weekend.
Yes. Yeah, so you're going to have to rug up. You're going to Tasmania.
I am.
You are. And tell us why you're going there. And you tell us why it's so important to go there.
Yeah, well, what many people might not know is that last year I launched something called the National Institute for Challenging Homophobia Education, or NICHE for short. Mm-hmm. What I try and do with that is to get a national approach to rural communities and to look at all the ways in which I can pick up on the work that I did when I drove around country Australia trying to challenge homophobia one cuppa at a time. And so what I do is, like, for example, last year I went to a couple of different communities, places like Mount Isa, places like Bunbury and WA, to spend a week there to map the opportunities, map how safe it is, look at, you know, what are all the things that might be, you know, could be built on, and then to give training, to run things in schools, to talk to media, and spend a week getting the town having a conversation. So all these new conversations. I'm going down to Northwest Tasmania because that's seen by many, many studies and surveys whenever they're done. Northwest Tasmania is seen to be the most homophobic place in Australia, along with country Queensland, and coming up close behind is that more recently some of the research is talking about around the Mount Gambier area. And so what I'm trying to do is to go into those places and not go, okay, this is going to be the most horrendous dark place on earth, but just go, why might that be the case, and what are people doing to challenge and change that?
Is it a scarier mindset to go into a place like this, or do you see, and I think I probably know the answer, you just see that as a greater challenge?
Look, I see it. We all know in the LGBTI community how much stereotypes and assumptions can harm us.
Of course.
And how we kind of we have to come out from under the weight of those to actually show that we're not all these things that people place upon us. And I view places like Northwest Tasmania the same. Is I know a lot. I've got friends who have come from Northwest Tasmania. There are lots of pros. There are lots of cons, like anywhere. But for me, I want to go there and find out what are the opportunities. So, for example, I announced that I was going down there, and all of a sudden, Rosebery and Queenstown high schools, which people would tell me are probably going to be the roughest places I'm ever going to go, are actually wanting to do some work. So they're wanting me to come in and talk with their students, for example.
Does that make you feel warm and fuzzy in a sense that they want you there? You're not having to battle all the time?
Oh, partly I think I wish you didn't, because I'm going to have to go in there and wait. I'm going to have to go in there, but it's a chance for me to go in and talk with the students, and like I do workshops with them to try and kind of get them thinking about things like that's okay differently, and think about supporting their friends. And but the thing that sticks in my mind is when I was driving around Australia, I did go to the northwest of Tasmania, and one of the key workers up there said, you need to know that the difference between Northwest Tasmania and Launceston, so we're talking about the north of Tasmania, we're talking about 2 hours. People in the northwest are coming out 20 years later on average than those people in Launceston. So they give people this sense about what is this thing about the isolation, the lack of role models, the kind of history of the wild west coast of Tasmania. We're talking 20 years on average that people are coming out. Now, there's something up there.
So you have to know this, I'm assuming, because it then tailors the way you approach the people.
Look. I guess I don't change too much what I'm going to do. So everyone knows that I'm going in there. Like all the teachers and the police and the health professionals and the school chaplains and all these other kinds of people who are down there, and they know what I'm going in for. But the thing that I'm trying to do is to ask as many questions as possible before I actually do anything. Yeah. So if I go in there and go, oh, Mr. Challenging Homophobia, I know what to do. I'm going to do this, and that, mm-hmm. and the other, won't work in any place that I go, whether that be Northwest Tasmania or Melbourne. If I go in and ask lots of questions and go, hey, maybe this can actually work and this can help. So, for example, we're doing lots of forums down there because people want to be able to come along, get some simple strategies. What are the basic statistics? What are the things that they can take into their everyday kind of workplaces and classrooms.
And do they also like to be involved? That's their way of, it's inclusion, of course, but it's also, is it not the way for them to be involved in a safe space without, they might not want to come out and talk to you openly. At least they can do it in a safe forum.
Yeah,
space.
Yeah. And look, you talked before about, you know, how people, you know, that everyday approach, and I talked about people saying that it seems like I'm approachable. Most of the conversations I will have in situations like that are after they've actually been through a forum or a workshop. Mm-hmm. And they go, we've experienced that, we've kind of got it, we know that you've answered all the questions and you've talked with us and you've told us this stuff. We feel in a safer space to be able to come up and go. And usually that's when people disclose about maybe a young person that they've been supporting or that they used to support who they've lost, or, you know, some of the complex challenging situations, and that's when we can kind of talk a little bit more. So I tell people that I'm more than happy to hang around and pack up for a very long time, and if they happen to come up and talk to me, that's okay. And I also tell them I'm not going to think that you're necessarily gay just because you come up and ask me a question at the end.
Do you find that that people come up to you and say, oh, I didn't think a gay person was like this, or, oh, you're not what I thought, or I thought all gay people like this. Do you find you get those types of comments?
Yeah, sure. I can tell you one of the ones that it both bowled me over and made me laugh, because if you don't laugh, you cry. But there was a woman in Mount Isa who came up to me and she said, gee, it must be really tough for you. And I said, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. And by doing this work? And she said, well, you're just so masculine and macho, and that must be so hard for you not to be effeminate all the time.
Really?
And, you know, like, you must be putting on this huge act. And I just took a deep breath. I went, and then we had a little bit more of a chat. But yeah, I get any number of comments and questions like that.
But you smile. This I would think if you allowed every single negative comment, statement, anything, it would get you down and you'd be beaten down. And look
it does accumulate. So it's about looking after myself and knowing if I'm doing too much of the work and if I need to, you know, take a break. There's only once where it sort of climbed on top of me, and I kind of started getting a little bit grumpy, and that was in 2005. And as soon as I sensed that little bit of grumpiness in my voice when someone asked me a question, and I just went, really, to myself, I went, you need to take a break. And I took a sabbatical to write my first book. But apart from that, touch wood, I haven't had that fed-upness coming.
Fed-upness?
Yeah.
That's good grammar in that.
Well, I am from the Bronx in Geelong, so, you know, it goes with that. Yeah.
We have had a message from Stephen. Great to hear Daniel on air with you again. You both have the back of keeping it simple and real. It's like the kitchen table conversation. Put the kettle on, he's on his way in. So, yeah, it's true, like a kitchen table. And I use that as the example for myself when I'm talking about being an ally. And I don't even on a conscious level think that I'm being an ally sometimes. But it's right, conversations around the kitchen table, cuppa, or whatever, dinner table. Why do people make it so hard, Daniel? I don't know.
We can tackle that after the next break.
Well done, you put me out of a job. We are going to go for a break and a happy song, and come back and chat to Daniel. You are on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Did you beep that out, the word sex? I hope so.
Parents in the room.
I wanted to shock my mother.
Oh, he's getting all hot and flustered. I hope Grandma's not listening.
Oh, Grandma.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
You are with Michelle and Daniel, and thank you to all those folks that are frantically typing their messages to us. It's lovely. So a big thank you to Cameron, who says, we're fighting the fight, and it's a great show, Daniel. I think we are fighting the fight, aren't we?
We're doing our best.
We are doing our best. And from lovely Mark Adams, that has a wonderful Joy on, show on Joy on Saturday afternoons called
The Escape Pod. Yes.
Yeah, fabulous travel show. He says, two of my favourite Joy people on air at once. I'm honest and open when people ask me questions. I answer them honestly. I get the, you seem so normal a lot. That highlights what you said before almost.
Sure. And I think there's a lot of people in the LGBTI community who have to hold their breath over the years when they hear that and, bite their tongue.
It's a strange thing.
Love you all out there.
I don't think they mean to be mean.
Absolutely not. And that's the thing, is that if we think about where they're coming from, it comes from a great place.
Yes.
We can also help them get to a better place so that,
If we choose to take it the wrong way and we know they don't mean to be, I think we're as much responsible if we do have a go at them when you really truly know, well, hey, they really don't mean to be mean.
And also recognising that sometimes we might be a little bit crankier and irritable, and we mightn't have had sleep and food, and we might snap back occasionally. And, but it's a marathon. It's not a race.
Gee, I don't know what it's like.
That was a Commonwealth Games reference.
Well done, bringing sport into Stand Up Straight. Yeah. Now, this is from Scotty. Daniel, would you like to read that one?
Yeah, he says, hi again. When I was 18, I was king hit for no reason. We're very sorry to hear. And luckily, my head did not hit the pavement, but I decided to move to Melbourne. I'm happy here and confident. No one can make me feel bad. Many people say I seem so straight for a gay guy. Funny, Scotty. I've heard Daniel Whithouse a few times on Joy, and I would like to say how inspiring he is. Oh, thank you. And I would like to give him a big hug if I met him. I can guarantee, Scotty, find me. We're going to have bear hugs. when I see you. I promise them to everyone, but yours will be special.
Oh, that's why I wanted you to read that one out. It was about yourself. It's weird reading about yourself.
It is.
Two great questions coming up next. How do you raise funds for touring to fight homophobia? And I'm sorry, I don't know who that's from, but that's a fabulous question. Yeah, so how do you do that?
Most of my work is self-funded, such as the tour around country Australia. It is difficult. There are competing interests and there are limited resources. I'm about to go for charity status for the National Institute of Challenging Homophobia Education for this reason. I try and think of always how can I do this work with little or no resources. And I've been lucky over the years to have some stunningly talented and generous people to do stuff for free. And it's a bit of a joke amongst those talented people, but they've helped me make films to share stories that have gone kind of all over the world as well as the country communities. And I'll keep on doing that until I get money. It's a difficult thing because, people don't necessarily think to put their money here. They think about other causes, I guess. And that's what I'm going to try and do over the next few years, is raise the profile of what people can do if they actually put money towards this work, such as, I'm funding myself to go to the northwest of Tasmania. Mm. I'm staying in kind of people's spare rooms and all that kind of stuff. And I love that. Whilst I love that, it's about, what happens if I didn't have those people with the spare bedrooms? What happens if I couldn't afford the flight down to the places where I go? And it's an ongoing dilemma.
Do you think, though, that that's perhaps part of what is your secret, is the fact that even though you might be with like-minded people and, they're opening up their spare bedroom for you, but in doing so, you are creating more conversations?
You're absolutely right. So, for example, travelling around the country, I spent 235 of 266 days with people I hadn't met before the tour started. So that was quite confronting because I'm a bit of an introvert. But at the same time, you're right, it gives me a different sense about the place I'm going. I think what I'm saying is I'm not saying I want to stay in hotel rooms because I think I would miss just about everything in these places. It's just that sometimes it would be nice to not be putting up the bill for a flight or that that kind of stuff. And to be able to, I guess, for example, when I went to Mount Isa last year, there was a fantastic person who, his name's Phil Brown. He's involved with the Equal Love group up in Brisbane. He donated money so that I could leave books and resources behind. Mm. It's that kind of thing to be able to do something meaningful with that money that's going to actually make a difference on the ground in those places.
Mm. There seems to be, would you say it's a move, like a Daniel Whithouse movement, do you think?
I think that there's been too many people doing this for too long before me and with me now and who will continue it. I think that the movement is bigger than me. I think that if, I try not to have the focus on me so much because, I want everybody to have the feeling that they can do this. If it becomes the Daniel Whithouse movement, then all of a sudden people go, well, we'll leave it up to him and only he can do it. And we all know that that's not right. We all know that's not true.
Mm.
So my thing is to make this work as accessible as possible. I mean, jump onto my Facebook page or my Twitter. I'm always talking about the everyday stuff that I'm doing, but it's for that reason. Every single one of us can do something. We just, some of us can obviously do more than others, but every single one of us can do something.
What are some things that perhaps a 15, 16-year-old person in the playground and they hear something that they don't like, whether they're gay or not themselves, what could they say?
Look, I always say that the first thing that you need to do is assess whether you're going to be safe and okay. Mm. I guess what's coming through now in lots of schools is that there's young people who just go, like, just don't be an idiot. That's not okay.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say, don't be an idiot because I'm gay, or you're going to think I'm gay because I'm going to actually say this. It's more about they can say, this is what I think. And more we find that when one young person stands up and says it, other people go, oh yeah, gee, that's, exactly. Like, why would you say that? That's just stupid.
Yeah.
The reason why that's important is so many young people I've supported over the years assume that everyone's homophobic, assume that everyone's not going to be supportive. And if you can be that one voice, and often I'll say it's the only gay friendly voice in the village. If you can be that person, you're like an oasis in the desert, but you also open up all of these opportunities. But again, only if people are safe, young people are safe and okay. And I do workshops with young people, who are seen to be leaders and allies and things to give them skills to be able to assess that, but also some stuff that they can do that works for lots of young people.
So same question to a 40-year-old person and someone in their workplace. Again, do they still have to assess how safe it is to say something? Do you still have to have the same checklist in your head then if you're a 40-year-old in the workplace to a school year?
Look, I always think that you need to think about that. And the more I find that people challenge homophobia, once they've done it once or twice or three times, after a while it's kind of like, I've got the knack of this, I'm not going to have to think too much because they sense it. But in workplaces you have different things. In schools there are not always policies and procedures and practices to back you up. In workplaces, in lots of workplaces, not all, and I guarantee that they're not all, but in lots of places people have the workplace to back them up. And there are also some other avenues to kind of go for outside support. In schools for a 15, 16-year-old, they don't necessarily have that support. They might not be out to anyone. They might not have local services in a rural area. They might not. So that's a completely different thing to someone who's 40. But I always go, think about the people around you who have got your back.
Yeah.
Because that's really important, is that young people will talk about, if they've got five people around them, they seem to thrive a lot more. So I would be going, is it important that it happens now? If so, go for it. If not, maybe you want to kind of look at how can you get some support around you so you don't have to do this on your own.
So we've actually had another question that kind of links into what we're saying, and it says, how do you keep safe in societies that are homophobic?
Sure, and that's assessing situations, and whether that's about homophobia, racism, sexism, it's about what can you do to keep yourself safe. And there's small forests that are being chopped down in that regard, but for me, it's always about finding support. So often I'll find, a teacher will say, everybody in my school is homophobic. I've put up posters, they've defaced them and ripped them down. If I say stuff, they'll start being homophobic towards me. I don't feel safe. I think I might lose my job. In those situations,
fear-based, isn't it? Fear-based.
It's about, well, and with very real reasons. So, in those situations, I go, who are the people around you who might be supportive? But also sometimes you just have to kind of give it up and go for people outside, who can support you there.
Mm. Wise words, Daniel, as always. We're going to go for another quick break and come back and wrap up the show. You're on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
I'm Dean Arcuri, and when listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9, it's not about same-same, it's all about being different, with Michelle on the mic.
You are with Michelle nearly at the end of the hour on Stand Up Straight with Daniel Whithouse. We've had another question come through from the lovely Scotty. Thank you. Your fingers must be tired.
Frequent SMS points.
Yes. Yeah, so he's saying that he wants to become involved. Daniel, if you ever want volunteers for your work, I'll put my hand up. Thank you, Scotty. So that's a great question, not just for Scotty, of course, Daniel.
And at the moment, I can only pay in bear hugs and cuppers, Scotty, as many know. But that could all
popular.
Change. But I always say to people, please go to my website, thatssogay.com.au. You can find out more about the breadth of the work that I do, the kinds of things. And I always say, read as much as you can. First, and then let me know how you'd like to become involved. There are different campaigns, but if people want to get involved, the first and foremost thing they can do is have conversations with the people around them. Mm. So often people think with homophobia they have to do something extraordinary. What I say to people is the best thing you can do is to talk and have conversations with the people in your everyday networks, your friends, your family, your sporting clubs, your workplaces, all of those things. That's the best thing that you can do, because we know that that's where movement and change comes from.
What are they going to learn from doing that, do you think?
They're going to have to learn to probably not throw things, to, you know, hold their breath. But people say is, I've had so many workshops where activists have said, look, I can do this. I can go and lobby parliamentarians. I can do stuff in schools. But when it comes to my own family at Christmas time, I just blow a gasket. You know, when it comes to my people in the workplace, I can do it outside of work, but inside work for some reason, you know, I can't, or in the sporting, you know, whatever that might be. So it's about what are the ways in which you can challenge yourself. Because we know that the most meaningful change that happens with people who are homophobic is when someone they know comes out who they have an ongoing, significant, existing relationship. It's better than any campaign, any program, anything that you can think of.
I would think, well, because it has the biggest impact on them.
Because it's like, this person, they're in my life, I know them, I like them, hang on, they're gay, I don't like that, and cognitive dissonance does the rest.
And what we might see and say from the distance is sometimes could be seen as rhetoric. All of a sudden it's actually in your face.
That's why the greatest thing that we have that's on our side to our advantage is our own stories. We don't have to make anything up.
Absolutely.
We don't have to come up with anything, you know, like a soundbite or whatever that might be, funny, smart. We can just go, here's my story, what's happening is not okay, do you support me or not? You know, this is where I'm coming from. And people respond to that flesh and blood, that humanness. And please, if someone, you know, just all those people, all of you out there, like, we should all be getting bear hugs.
Of course we should.
More bear hugs and cuppers.
So they should come in now in the next couple of minutes and you can give them out for free.
Done.
Daniel Whithouse, an absolute and utter joy, as always. Thank you so much for your beautiful words of wisdom. And we'll keep coming back in, so we've got maintenance for our listeners, you reckon?
They can decide that. Yeah.
Thank you once again. Up next is Spirit Lounge with Joy. I'm going to leave you with your weekly challenge. What will you do this week to stimulate dialogue, create change, or encourage involvement? You've been listening to Michelle Barber on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.